I don't know about you, Shannon, but there are a couple of things that inspire me in a at the end of a winter as we arrive at springtime or virtual springtime.
Can I guess?
I'm sorry, say again.
Can I guess?
Sure, go ahead.
The Masters.
That would be one.
And the start of baseball season.
That would be the other one.
And both, do I get a prize?
You do. You get to stay.
That's not a prize.
Well, some would say it is, John. and both of them are on the horizon. The Masters is, a week and a bit away. And yeah. The baseball season opens tomorrow.
Yes, it does.
And it will be an unusual baseball season, but not as unusual as last year when we saw empty stadia all over the place. We'll see some of that. And we won't see full ballparks, I don't think, anywhere.
No.
Although the way things are going in the U.S. with the pandemic, you don't even know from state to state.
Well, and the Blue Jays have already announced an extension of their time in Dunedin. I quite frankly, I don't understand what they're waiting for to announce it, that they're not going to be in Toronto.
At all?
Well, at least until mid-July, Bob. The question is by June, is it too hot in Florida to play? And do you get those 4 o'clock thunderstorms? And will that wreak havoc on things down there? So they've already committed to playing, I think, 3 homestands into May in Dunedin at TD Park.
Yeah. Have you been to Texas?
Oh, yeah. I mean, same thing.
Yeah, and arguably the weather is worse in Texas, perhaps. Yes, you do get the 3:30 rain in Florida, but that doesn't impact very often. You can even play your scheduled afternoon games in the evening. They've improved the lights in Dunedin, so you don't have to play Saturday afternoon or Sunday out. You don't even have to play Sunday afternoon games if you don't want to. I think under the circumstances, MLB would allow them to play afternoon games.
I guess the question is when are they going to end up in Buffalo? That's really the question, isn't it?
Well, yeah. But if Buffalo plays, then that becomes somewhat problematic and maybe more than somewhat problematic. In the minor leagues, basically you play every day the way you do in the major league.
But if the Blue Jays elect to play in Buffalo, I would suggest the AAA team isn't playing there, and they'll just have to find another place for them to play.
Well, and that would be a very interesting scenario, wouldn't it? Yeah. How would the folks in Buffalo feel about their hometown team getting kicked out for the major league team north of the 49th?
Oh, yeah. We'll twist your arm. We'll give you Major League Baseball. What a punishment.
Well, I get that, except, again, how many people are going to get a chance to go and see it? So, if you want to watch Major League Baseball, you're going to probably do it on television if you're in Buffalo, and you could do that anyway.
Well, but you can put in, I think New York State's at 10 or 15% now, Bob. So you can put people in arenas and for the sake of argument, if it's the stadium there's 20,000 seats, you can put 2,500 people in the ballpark.
But I think a month ago, we would have thought that we would be somewhere down the road with the pandemic and have a better understanding that things are getting better, and they're not.
And why would you have suggested that?
Well, because the president of the United States said he was going to get 1 million vaccines out or 100.
They've done that.
They've done more than that. And rates are going up. Yes, a lot of it has to do with the acts of the governors of the individual states and opening things up probably too early or at least too extensively.
Yeah.
But is there any reason to believe that that's going to change? And I think the answer to that question is no.
And listen, we're starting. It's the third wave. Look at all the provinces that have declared it in the last 72 hours. Third waves are here.
And I get that. And I'm not ignoring that. And obviously that's more important to people in Canada, but we're aware of that here, but we don't have the quantity of vaccines yet to create that, that hypothetical immunity scenario,
herd immunity.
Yeah.
But it's really the issue now is the variants, all these different types of COVID-19 that are, are going through, the ones with
the vaccine effective on all of them. That's part of it. I grant you, but there are just a boatload of people who are A, not being careful, and B, are not getting the vaccine when they could be. I mean, there are states where you can get a vaccine if you are over the age of like 20.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Now, so, but people aren't doing it. And the lineups aren't what they were. And in fact, there are people are missing appointments, making appointments to go and get the vaccine and then not showing up in huge numbers. It's all very puzzling to me, I must confess. And how does this impact all sports, but especially baseball, because it's just starting now?
Yeah. And the fact that most baseball is outdoors, I guess just Tampa is the only indoor stadium left now, right? So the issue becomes, do you want to go and be outside? Do you want to go and be in a large group? Like, do you want to be with 8,000 other people? Lots of people do. Lots of people don't take it as seriously as many of us. That to me is an interesting question. Do you even want to go? And I think it's a bigger question for the fall, for the indoor sports, basketball and hockey particularly.
Well, yeah.
Do you want to go indoors and sit with 10,000 other people? Do you?
Well, okay. Let me ask you, first of all, if the Blue Jays were playing at Rogers Center, would you go?
I would have to figure out what the seating plan is. Like how are they going to adjust it? Where am I going to be separated from other people? How close is the next spectator to me? I'm serious. I think that's what you'd have to consider.
I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to go. I haven't had my first shot yet.
Uh-huh.
Although I'm apparently on a list. Even then, I don't know how I'll feel once I have, both shots.
Yeah.
But I tell you right now, I'm not going.
Yeah.
And forget going to a hockey game or a basketball game indoors.
I think that's going to be a real concern. Well, for people that are more conservative with their lifestyles, obviously there are lots of people in both countries, particularly in the United States, that could care less and throw caution to the wind every day. All you have to do is, there was discussions about maybe they should not test for people going to the Final Four. Seriously? Or perhaps what happened at spring break in Florida.
Well, and this is exactly what I'm talking about. Stupid. Is America is still not taking this seriously.
Yeah.
And look at, we can't, the province of Ontario has essentially been shut down for the most part for several weeks, and cases are going up. And the highways and the roadways at rush hour are filled. I don't know where all these people are going, but they're sure as hell not staying home.
Well, they're not going to get their shots.
And they're not going to get their shots. So, and I understand the frustration. We all have it.
Okay.
But I'm not particularly optimistic on where we're going to be a couple of months from now. With regard to, going back to normalcy or any degree of it, I think we may be a long way away from that.
Okay.
Who knows? We may not live to see
those
days. Some baseball talk for people today. We've spent some time talking about the Toronto Blue Jays, and we'll continue to do that in this program, but we're going to focus on the rest of baseball. And, I look ahead to see who's who. And I think it's safe to say that unless you know nothing about baseball, there is one clear favorite to win the World Series this year. And it's the same team that won the World Series last year and essentially in a shortened season tied the record for winning percentage. And that's the Los Angeles Dodgers. Our friend Bill Shaken is with the LA Times and covers the Dodgers. We'll talk to him about that team and the rest of baseball when the program continues after these messages. Bob McCown, John Shannon with you. Some baseball chatter as we get set for the opening of the Major League regular season, a full 162. as unusual as that may seem.
You think he'll get through 162?
I have no clue. Perhaps our guest has a better take on this than we do. He is the longtime writer for the LA Times. He's covered baseball there for an awful long period of time. Bill Shaken joins us. Mr. Shaken, good to see you again. How are things?
Things are well. How are you?
We're all right. You're making out okay with this COVID stuff. Have you had your shot yet?
One down, one to go. Very fortunate.
Attaboy. You spend most of your time covering the Los Angeles Dodgers. They had an extraordinary year last year. We don't have to tell anybody. Mind you, the last 6 or 7 years have been pretty extraordinary for the Dodgers, but a World Series championship on the heels of a shortened regular season where I believe they tied in terms of winning percentage what would have been the best season ever, something like 717 or something in that range. And the projection this year is more of the same, and perhaps even an all-time record of 117-plus victories. You're there. You're close to them. You know this organization. Are they capable of that?
Well, you know, we have hopefully 162 games, as you mentioned, to find out. But they're built on depth more than any team, I think, in baseball history. And they've made that their buzzword. And for years, they had taken a lot of grief from the fans in Los Angeles because it almost appeared to be more about depth and about winning in the regular season than it was loading up to win in October. But last year, the Dodgers brought in Mookie Betts. They've signed him long-term, and they haven't sacrificed the depth in their farm system to do it. So at this point, the Dodgers are running out David Price, former Cy Young Award winner, as a long reliever because he's not one of the five best starters. That's an instance of their depth.
Speaking of Price, there's been some speculation that maybe the Dodgers might consider moving him. Do you think that's even possible?
Well, I think by the time later in the summer where they see where they are in the pennant race and what they might need to do, they wouldn't mind shedding a little bit of payroll so that they don't get saddled with the most onerous luxury tax penalties. And they're not even so much concerned about the dollars in the tax bill as much as losing some draft picks or moving down on the draft board, which of course is how you're able to replenish the depth that you have. Trading Price would be one way to do that, but there's certainly no urgency about it. And, you know, right now they've made very clear that their number one priority is trying to win a World Series again. And number two is everything else.
So Bob has given the Dodgers the World Series already. Is San Diego
hard? I got news for you.
But is San Diego next in line? Are the Padres the next best team out there, or who's going to challenge the Dodgers, if anyone?
It's hard to believe that the Padres would not be the second best team, not only in the National League West, but in the entire National League. They brought in Blake Snell, they brought in Yu Darvish, they brought in Joe Musgrove. And remember, this was a team that was the second best team in the National League last year. They had the second best record to the Dodgers. They had the third best record in all of baseball behind only the two teams that played in the World Series, the Dodgers and the Tampa Bay Rays. So an already good team got a lot better. And certainly you'd think that they would be the team most likely to dethrone the Dodgers.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the relationship between the Dodgers and the Padres. It has been a long time since you could even imagine any kind of rivalry. The Dodgers have been good. The Padres have been horrible. Historically, the rivalry for the Dodgers is up north with the Giants. You know, the Angels playing in the American League, just being down the road, really isn't a factor here, I don't think. But do Dodger fans kind of look down their nose at the Padres?
I don't think they care all that much. I think that between Los Angeles and San Diego, there's a lovely train ride you can take down the California coast. And when the Dodgers play in San Diego, over the years, the tendency has been for a lot of Dodger fans to jump on that train or to jump into their cars, drive a couple hours or take the train to San Diego and pack Petco Park with Dodger fans. And this year, the Padres are so excited. The city of San Diego is so excited because last year when the Padres all of a sudden turned into this amazing team, nobody could go to the games because the ballparks were closed.
Right.
So this is the first chance Padres fans really have to see this one team. And the Padres, and I wrote about this yesterday, actually, have pleaded with their fans, don't resell your tickets to Dodger fans. We'd actually like a home field advantage here for once.
Well, and it's understandable that a much smaller market like San Diego would aspire to be rivals of the Dodgers, not just because of the geographic impact, but because the Dodgers are an iconic franchise without question. And the Padres were an expansion franchise, granted 50 years ago or whatever it was. But that being the case, now you have two teams that, I mean, I don't think they're going to battle for the division championship. I think the Dodgers are going to win it quite comfortably. And you might be right. The Padres might be the second best team, but do you think it's likely to be close?
Well, as so many other things, you know, it all depends on pitching. You know, if you look at the Padres, for example, Blake Snell, the Tampa Bay Rays, as we all saw in October, didn't think he was a guy that should be pitching in the sixth or seventh inning. Blake Snell thinks he is that kind of guy. Maybe he gets a chance. Now, you, Darvish, Dodger fans remember him blowing up in the World Series in 2017. We didn't know, of course, at the time that the Astros knew exactly what was coming. But in the meantime, he did a great job the last year and a half with the Cubs, became one of the best pitchers again in Major League Baseball. For the Dodgers, you know, Clayton Kershaw, another year older. Trevor Bauer was great last year, won a Cy Young the year before, wasn't so great. What are the Dodgers going to get out of that? You know, you just never know. So let's see how the injury and performance plays out.
Bill, where do you put Trevor Bauer in the rotation?
The Dodgers are putting him number two. That enables Clayton Kershaw to start on opening day and enables Walker Buehler to start the home opener, which is when the Dodgers will celebrate their championship. But I think in terms of the long run, that was a big concern among a lot of major league executives this year, is you got a guy whose, you know, career ERA is pretty much four, and how much long-term do you want to invest in a guy who's had two elite seasons in his career? And what the Dodgers were able to do is sign him to a contract that's basically 3 one-year deals, and he can leave after any one of those years. So there's not the 6 or 7 year kind of exposure that Bauer and his folks were looking for at the start of the winter.
Is Buehler deserving of being an opening day pitcher? I mean, I know Kershaw's going to get it because of his history, and probably deservedly so. He's always been a Dodger. He's got Cy Young awards. He's been a great pitcher. But is Buehler the better pitcher today?
Buehler is the best pitcher the Dodgers have right now.
Yeah. Well, is there any issue with him? There have been some who have questioned his ability to go long in games, and I'm not even sure that's relevant anymore the way baseball is using pitching staffs. What do you think of Buehler as a guy who could maybe get a few complete games?
Well, I think that, as you alluded to, has more to do with the team he plays for than with Walker himself. The Dodgers don't really want guys throwing 200 games. They're in a very fortunate position that when they sit down to plan the season, they count October in their schedule. They've been in the playoffs every year since 2013, haven't missed once. So what they want to do is, assuming they can maintain that fortunate position, is have guys ready to go on October. And if that means you get extra rest during the season, so be it. Maybe they skip a start. Maybe you go on the injured list with a legitimate injury, maybe with a not so legitimate injury, but your arm needs some time to rest. The Dodgers now are going to start a season with David Price, Jimmy Nelson, and Tony Gonsolin, three major league quality starters in their bullpen that can pick up the last four innings of a game if you go the first five. So what Buehler can do on another club and what Buehler is limited to with the Dodgers' interest in having him ready for October are two very different things.
That brings me to the question about the manager. Does Dave Roberts get enough credit for being the manager of this team? Or is it, I mean, from the outside, you always hear about the numbers game and you hear about the analytics. Is he getting any more credit after winning the World Series?
I think that he is. I mean, ultimately he's the guy that led the team that won the World Series. But I think, as everyone knows, the Dodgers and many other teams, not just the Dodgers, operate in what the teams now like to call collaborative fashion. Now, the idea that Dave Roberts is just given a lineup card and makes it out the way he wants. That just doesn't happen anymore. And again, that's just the Dodgers. That's with a lot of teams. The front office comes down, they present data from the analytics office. Everybody tries to figure out the best matchups, and not only for the first inning, but project out over the course of the game. Once the game starts, it's all up to Dave Roberts, and it's his call to decide. And ultimately, for a manager today, while the fans can question, hey, did you pull the guy too early or did you send the right pinch hitter up? It's about managing the clubhouse and managing personalities. And more and more these days, you know, managing the relationship between the front office and the players, because a lot of players don't want reams of data shoved at them. They want somebody to explain to them one or two statistics that are going to help them better their performance. And the Dodgers do a really nice job of that. And Dave Roberts is part of that.
In every organization, there is a traditionally favorite manager, a guy that fans love. And of course, I would say in Los Angeles, it probably was still Tommy Lasorda, although it's been many years since Tommy was there. It was as if Tommy was beloved. He was a larger than life character. He made appearances on late night TV shows. He was more of a national figure in Los Angeles, and there was very little that Tommy could do that was considered wrong. Where's Dave Roberts on that scale? Or have things changed so much, Bill, in baseball that no manager can really be that guy anymore?
I think it's more the latter. You know, when I was growing up, and I don't mean to sound old here, but we rooted for players, and the manager was sort of the face of the team. And
that's true.
Sort of embraced that in a way few managers did. And he took pride in being not only a manager, but a celebrity, and, you know, having Frank Sinatra come into his office after the games and such. But I think there's a whole generation now that grows up not wanting to be a baseball player, but wanting to be a general manager.
Yeah.
They put a team together and win. It started with, you know, rotisserie or fantasy leagues. It's gone exponentially more wild now with analytics. And if you look at, frankly, who gets the big salaries, general manager never used to be paid what a manager was back in Tommy Lasorda's day. But now the money goes to people like Andrew Friedman and Theo Epstein. And I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong. It's just the way it is. And those guys now have become the face of the franchise.
I spend a lot of time, and John will attest to this.
railing.
bemoaning the days of the four-man rotation and complete games and 300 innings and 300 strikeouts like Nolan Ryan. And I mean, you know, all of those things that we
get off my lawn, get off my lawn, Bob.
Yeah. Well, that's, and I'm that guy. And I look at the game today and it's almost unrecognizable. You've been around a fair bit of time. Does today's game, the way it is played, the way it is constructed, are you okay with it? Do you think it's the right decision?
I think it's the inevitable decision, because general managers, the guys that put the teams together, used to be, for lack of a better term, what we called baseball men. They were guys who had played the game or coached the game or scouted or somehow were involved with teams and worked their way up in the front office. Now those guys tend to come from Wall Street or McKinsey consulting companies, and they're much more prone to making decisions with data. And that's really helpful. But what the decisions have shown based on the data is that, hey, let's use more relief pitchers and let's limit their use. Let's let the guys emphasize the first few innings pitching and not let them face batters a third time. Let's maximize our platoons and not only just left-handers and right-handers. Let's have a guy with a card in his butt pocket that will tell him where to play in the outfield for every single hitter. And all those decisions have tended to, unfortunately, slow the game down and emphasize guys who can walk, guys who can strike out as a pitcher, and guys at bat who can hit home runs. And I think what you're seeing now with Theo Epstein getting into the commissioner's office is Major League Baseball realizing the incentives for the general managers are to win, and they're going to do everything the data tells them to try to win. The incentives for drawing fans might be different, because sitting around for 10 minutes while two balls are put in play is pretty freaking boring. And singles are exciting and triples are exciting.
Sure they are.
Exciting. How are we going to get that in the game when the incentives tell you not to. And that's what they're wrestling with.
Do you think that, you know, everybody's joked a little bit about age here. When none of us are young. But have they lost a generation of fans?
I think they're at risk of losing it. Certainly there's a young generation now that it's not limited to baseball. They want to do stuff on their screens.
Yeah. And
the question is, if you're going to have people who are not willing to sit down in front of a television set, maybe they don't even watch television for that matter, but are not willing to give you 3 or 3.5 hours of their night every night, how do you capture them? Is it with short clips they can access on their phone? Is it with sports betting, which every sport seems to think now is the wave of the future? Is it a more exciting game? Is it having players active on social media so that they can relate more to the fans? There's a long list of things people are trying, but certainly one of them is to try to make the game at its core more exciting.
Well, one of the things that you alluded to, and we are all aware of, is pitchers are not allowed to throw, generally speaking, anywhere near as many pitches or as many innings, more accurately, as they once were. And part of the theory is, as you alluded to, a reluctance to have a pitcher face a lineup for a third time. But another part of that is pitch count. And you don't want a guy throwing 120, 130 pitches, which is what used to happen with some degree of regularity. It certainly wasn't an unusual thing. And the worst thing that's happened to baseball, in my opinion, has been the radar gun, because now there is a complete focus on how hard you're throwing, and maybe even more than how well you're throwing. And this becomes a cycle where, you know, a pitcher knows that he gets to the major leagues by being able to throw a 95 mile an hour fastball. And if he can't throw it 90, he's not even going to get there. What's wrong with that scenario? I mean, I see all kinds of things wrong with that scenario, but, in your opinion, does that work, that theory?
It works. The data shows that it works. And when I asked Billy Epler, who was the Angels general manager up till last year, about why couldn't we change the game a little bit? And he said, look, the number one predictor of a pitcher's success is velocity. But look at the game today. You know, kids who play baseball, not just when they get to high school, but from time they pick up a ball, all these travel teams and elite weekend clubs and all that, everybody's scouting for velocity. So
yes, they are.
If you had to try to get a college scholarship or a pro contract, you're going to do everything you can to nurture that fastball. My point would be, if we know all this stuff that we do about data now, and we don't have to worry that a strikeout is better than a ground ball, because if you hit a ground ball, that might go for a hit, right? There's no possibility of that with the strikeout. But we know where you're going to hit the ball now. So why don't we have control pitchers who are going to throw 88 to 90, who aren't going to get their arms hurt, because arms are not meant to throw 100 miles an hour. They're not going to be going in for Tommy John surgery. Pitch to the corners, pitch to control, station your defense in the right places. And you might not have a guy strike out 200 batters in a season. Might do very well. And of course, the saint, if you will, for that kind of pitching, Greg Maddux, and he had a pretty good career.
It's only going to take one team to take the chance on that they actually win, and then you got a copycat league anyway, though, right, Bill? Because that's what's going to happen.
The Cubs are doing that this year. I mean, Kyle Hendricks, their ace pitcher, you know, barely hits 90 miles an hour. They've got guys behind him who are certainly not flamethrowers. If they do well this year, I think people will take notice.
Well, here's one guy hoping that that's the case. and I'll tell you too, the other thing is, you know, I think we can all remember a time when Roger Clemens used to wind it up and throw it at 95 miles an hour and nobody could turn on it. Well, today everybody throws 95 miles an hour and everybody can turn on a 95 mile an hour fastball. You know, I mean, I don't know how hard you have to throw it where guys can't get around on that pitch. It's not even, I don't even know if it's 100. It's become a completely different game. And you talked about, you know, one of the factors of starting pitchers not working long is to protect them so that their arms don't break down. But that's still happening every bit as frequently right now, Billy, as it was in the past.
Sure. A lot of it is tied to velocity. I mean, arms are not meant to throw that hard. I was going to say one other thing is, if you get the guys who emphasize control and getting ground balls or getting fly balls as opposed to strikeouts, you don't need to make as many pitches to each batter to get those out. So the guy who might throw five innings and strike out 10 or 11 guys might instead go seven or eight, strike out five or six, but those middle relievers you don't really want in the ballgame because they're not that good anyway, you don't see them. So, you know, maybe you don't get a complete game, but at least you get two or three pitchers in a game instead of five or six, and all of a sudden the pace of play picks up too.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back with more. Bill Shakin of the LA Times is with us back after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, Bill Shakin of the LA Times with us talking baseball. Who's the best player in the game today?
Well, from where I sit here in Los Angeles, I would absolutely say Mike Trout. I think we go through a drill every year where Christian Yelich, he's caught up to Mike Trout. Bryce Harper, he's caught up to Mike Trout. You know, Juan Soto, he's caught up to Mike Trout. And while they're all great players, Mike Trout's a top five MVP guy every year. You know, I think other guys have to develop that sort of track record.
You went, I was actually going to ask this question without Bob prompting that question. And that is, when does Mike Trout get impatient with the rest of his team? Because the Angels, let's face it, the Angels have become an afterthought in the last few years, more so than, particularly when you see the Padres and the Dodgers playing so well in the market.
I think from the outside, there's certainly a common perception that at some point, Mike Trout is just going to get fed up and say, I want out. Maybe in the way that Arenado did with the Colorado Rockies. But the fact is, Trout has a wonderful relationship with Artie Moreno, the Angels owner. As a kid who grew up in New Jersey, I'm sure he appreciates, you know, spending half the year living by the beach in Southern California. But most importantly, Mike Trout has had two chances at free agency, and he passed them both up.
That's right.
Term contracts to stay with the Angels. And I think the actions speak louder than words.
We're not here to suggest the Dodgers need Mike Trout. But has that fantasy? I assume people, you've written about this, the possibility of Trout moving an hour up the freeway from Anaheim into Dodger Stadium. Yes.
Artie Moreno, the Angels owner, has made clear for years that he's not trading Mike Trout, not to the Dodgers or anyone else. And Mike doesn't ask to be traded.
He's never indicated any interest in putting on that uniform, huh?
No, and the other thing I think I hear anyway from a lot of folks is, you know, the Angels have been so mediocre for so long and their farm system dropped down. You know what they really need to do? They need to make a Herschel Walker trade. And you know, a lot of older sports fans will remember how the Dallas Cowboys had the Herschel Walker trade.
Sure. Yep.
Had to do with trading a lot of draft picks. It wasn't just players. And in baseball, you can't trade your draft picks. So there is no Herschel Walker trade to be made.
Are the Angels going to be better this year? I know there's some people that think they might be half decent. Do you think so?
Story for the Angels every year is, you know, they're going to hit pretty well. They've got Trout, they've got Otani, they've got Rendon, they've got Upton. I don't want to really throw Pujols in there because he's at the end of his career, but you might get a few home runs out of him. David Fletcher is a tremendous leadoff hitter, but it's, can they pitch? And every year they've had pitchers that have been ineffective and injured. If that changes this year, then I think they'll be in the playoffs. If it's the same old Angels who can't find any consistency in their pitching staff, then they won't. And the new general manager, Perry Manassian, has not wasted any time. Last year, there were 10 guys that the Angels started the season with in their bullpen. This year, how many of those 10 are back? One.
One.
Wow. You know, it's interesting, Bill, being where you are. Do you enjoy the National League game more than the American League game? Do you have a preference?
Well, I guess sentimentally, I enjoy the National League game. I was born in Montreal, grew up in LA, so that's what I'm used to. And it's a great story when you have, for example, Clayton Kershaw hitting a home run to win on opening day. But I think from talking to the players and from talking to the owners as well, everybody would just as soon watch the hitters hit and the pitchers pitch. The pitchers, yeah, it might be a great story once a month if they get a hit, but, you know, having a pitcher, as with Zach Gallen in Arizona now, who's the Diamondbacks' best pitcher, hurt because he got hurt working on his hitting. Is it worth it? You know, probably not at the salaries that guys make now.
The DH and inevitability across the board?
Both sides want it. I mean, the only reason that we don't have it this year is that the owner said, we'll give you a universal DH players union, but you have to give us expanded playoffs. And the union said, well, number one, we're not even sure how much all this is worth for the expanded playoffs. Number two, last year we thought the expanded DH was a good idea in both leagues, and it's going to keep pitchers from getting hurt. So why don't we just agree to that? We can negotiate other stuff later. And the owners didn't want to do that. But the collective bargaining agreement is up this year. There's going to have to be a new labor agreement. And I think the expectation, at least, is that there will be a DH in both leagues next year.
I mean, I grew up, there was a winner in the when I was a kid, or the American League champion played the National League champion in the World Series. There were no playoffs. Didn't exist. I think there were 8 or 10 teams in each league at that point. We understand things have evolved.
Is Connie Mack still in Philadelphia?
Connie Mack was a rookie.
Okay.
bite me. We get that things have changed. But are you in favor of expanded playoffs? Did you like what you saw more last year?
I think we came one game from having it be a complete disaster. And that one game was game 7 of the American League Championship Series. Because when Tampa Bay won, all of a sudden the World Series had the team with the best record in the National League and the team with the best record in the American League. So everything worked out. If Houston had won, you would have had the team with the best record in the National League, the Dodgers, against a team with a losing record in the Astros. And that's just a mockery. It, you know, for a sport that prides itself on 162 games of a regular season, and I know last year was not 162, but the idea is that the regular season is long enough that it can separate the pretenders from the contenders to have the possibility of an under 500 team sneak into the World Series, I think is pretty abysmal. And to his credit, when Rob Manfred proposed expanded playoffs for this year, he wasn't asking for 16 teams like last year. They were talking about 14. Right now it's 10. I would suspect maybe they'll compromise at 12 for next year.
I don't mind the expanded playoffs at all. I just, when it creates more interest, I think, I mean, last year happened just because they couldn't have a full 162 game year. So when you go 162 games and then still have all these extra playoff games, boy, that makes for a long baseball season.
Well, I don't think they would though, Billy, would you? I think
no, but if they go 10,
well, but somewhere there is an understanding that you may have to cut it back to 154, which is where it was.
I'd love that
for some time. Well, I think we all would. I don't know about you, Mr. Shaken, but I'd be happy with 154 and a couple more teams in the postseason. I'm not sure you would be.
It just depends, I guess, on how many there are, because you know, you guys tell me, being where you are in Toronto, but I don't get a sense that the race for the 8th and final playoff spot in the NHL is all it's brought up to be, because you're trying to figure out, you know, which crummy team is going to knock out which other crummy team.
Woo-hoo! Well, you better ask Shannon that question. He's the hockey puck.
Well, I tell you what, though, what it does do, and what every network in this country does, is it creates interest and people talk about it. That's what's going to happen. Not this year, but in regular years, that's what people end up talking about. And creating interest is one thing that you try to do in as many markets as possible.
Yeah, what does happen in baseball, and I'd be curious how the new wave of general managers adopts to this, is you'd say, all right, so I can make the playoffs with a 500 record or something close to it. So now trading deadline, boy, I can get in the playoffs, right? I want to go get some better players and help my team. But analytics will tell you that if you're a team with a 500 record and you really are going to face, say, the Dodgers in the first round, is it really worth it to you to give up your best prospects to go get one pitcher who might help you win a wild card series, but isn't going to help you beat the Dodgers? And in that sense, there's sort of competing interests. The fan side would say, sell more tickets, right? Go make that trade. And the general manager would say, no, it's going to hamstring us for 2 or 3 or 4 years to come. And I don't know how baseball resolves that.
Huh. So the Dodgers are the clear-cut favorite in the National League. I would assume you think the Yankees are probably the favorite in the American League or not?
I'm not sold on anybody really in the American League, but if you had to pick somebody, I think you'd probably go with the Yankees.
Although I think we've all underrated the Tampa Bay Rays year after year after year and figure they're going to hit the wall this year. They're not going to be able to pull off the magic, and they just do it year after year. So they got holes, but they've had years where they've had holes before and have been a good team. So maybe them too.
Yeah. And look, I mean, Toronto's got a terrific offense, and if they can, you know, find some pitching, I think they could be the best team as well.
You a right-hander or a left-hander? Because they're looking for a starter.
Well, you know, if you can convert my miles per hour to kilometers, then I would still.
Just numbers on a piece of paper. Mr. Shakin, it has been a while since we've had a chance to chat. It's good to talk to you. Good to see you, too. And we wish you continued health. And enjoy the baseball season. We're almost there. Thanks, pal.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing a game in Montreal, hopefully, in the next 5 to 10.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be great, awesome. Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bill Shakin of the LA Times. We'll come back and wrap it up after this. McCown and Shannon with you. Our thanks again to Bill Shakin of the LA Times.
Who covers how about that, dude? Thinking that the Expo's coming back, 5 to 10. But he said 5 to 10 years.
Well, he's a Montrealer, and it's wishful thinking. But, I mean, don't we all want that to happen?
Sure. I think Montreal is an underrated sports town anyway. And if you were able to find a place in the downtown core to put a nice 35,000 to 40,000 seat stadium, I think it would do gangbusters.
Well, I think they have that. They have a spot that in mind. I mean, you got to get a team first. And look, I think we all remember the Expos much more fondly since they've departed than we thought of them when they were here. Even when they had Cromartie, Valentine, and Dawson in the outfield, and Gary Carter, and all those great players and those great teams that almost won but didn't.
Well, the Jays overshadowed them because the Jays won quicker, you know, and that's unfortunate.
The stadium was crummy and it was in the wrong place. Oh. And Montrealers didn't want to go.
But they had great barbecue, though. I tell you that when we used to go, great barbecue at Olympic Stadium. The other question, Bob, on that, if Montreal did come back, and you're the commissioner of baseball for 16 minutes,
yeah,
put him in the American League or the National League?
Oh, I'd want to put him in the American League.
Yeah, see, I think that was a huge mistake they made in 1977.
Well, you know who made that mistake?
Oh, tell me.
That mistake was made by the National League, who basically rejected the Toronto Blue Jays application.
By the Giants?
Well, the Giants first, but then they applied for an expansion franchise for the National League and were told they would have to wait. The American League found out about it and said, hey, you come to the American League and you can get in right now.
Yeah.
And they said, okay.
I think that, I think in the end, when they could not play games other than, you know, preseason, spring training, those two, and in the end, in the last few years, your buddy Beeston brought them back to play it in Montreal a couple of games. I think there was a terrible mistake not to have them in the same league for all those years. And then the only place they could ever meet was in the World Series, and that would never happen.
Well, McDougal and friends, when they were trying to acquire the franchise, went to the National League first, and the National League said, we'll take you, but we won't take you now. You got to wait. And the American League said, okay, we'll take you now.
Yeah.
And that's how it happened. It literally was that simplistic. It wasn't Major League Baseball. In those days, the National League and American League operated as separate entities.
Do you think that, because that was probably Chubb Feeney, who was the president of the National League at that point.
I think you're right, but I'm not positive.
But do you think that they were so mad at the people in Toronto trying to buy the Giants? Do you think that played politics?
No, I don't. I don't think that had anything to do with it.
You think they were just stoic and didn't want to move at a pace where the an expansion group wanted to join the league right away.
Yeah, and the American League said, "Well, we'll take you."
Yeah,
In those, they used to call it the senior circuit and the junior circuit. Sure. The National League was a senior circuit, and they acted like they were better, and they thought they were better than the American League. And the American League said, "Okay, we'll take Toronto and we'll take Seattle, and screw you, National League." And that's exactly what happened.
Well, and the American League was also, more progressive when it came to changing the rules of the game, right? That's how the DH went to the American League and not to the National League.
All of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to get out of here. Another program for your listening enjoyment comes to your way tomorrow. Again, our thanks to Bill Shaken of the LA Times for joining us. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, have yourselves a swell day, evening, afternoon, morning, whatever you want. We'll see you next time.
Classic close. Classic close, by the way.